Welcome to the first We've Been Everywhere speaker for 2012. Today, we're going to hear from Christopher McConnell, and he has been a student in the DLPS office since June of 2011, where he's responsible for a number of projects, including designing the posters and flyers for Kentucky Live and the Faraway Places speaker series that are around the building. So I'm sure you've all seen his work. While he was born in Atlanta, and now attends school here at Western, for several years, Christopher lived with his family in Chile. From ages 12 to 15, he lived in a rural area, but attended the McKay School in the urban sections of Valparaiso. As a result, he has some unique perspectives on both rural and urban Chile. And if you would please join me today in welcoming Christopher.
Good morning, everyone. How's everyone doing today? Thank you so much for taking a little bit of your time out of your day to come here and let me talk to you about Chile. I've actually spent the majority of my life in Chile. Basically, every year that I was in the U.S., I would go to Chile. And I was born in Atlanta. I went to school in Atlanta. Every summer, I would go with my mother, and we would go to Chile. And while most of my friends went to daycare, and they would be hanging out in the U.S., and I would wish I could spend time with them. And you know, most of my friends were from the U.S., and my first language was actually Spanish. My mother is Chilean. She's full-blooded Chilean. She was born in Valparaiso, and she taught me to speak Spanish ever since I was a little baby. And over time, I just got so used to being in the United States, but every year I would go to Chile, and then eventually I moved to Chile, and I spent a duration of my life there, basically all the years that I remember in Chile. In the mornings when I would wake up, I lived about 2 hours from my school, and I remember waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, rushing outside, getting dressed as quick as I could, and there would be a little haze of pollution over the city, and I would be rushing to the city bus, and then I would run, and then I would catch the next bus to Valparaiso, and then from Valparaiso I'd catch another bus to Viña del Mar, and from Viña del Mar I'd finally catch the next bus to Reñaca. So I would ride three buses, you know, using public transportation, to go to school every day. And it was quite a commute, but it was well worth it because the natural beauty of Chile is amazing. And one of the views that I would see looking out of the window of the bus was this. The road actually curves around here, and it just sort of like snakes all around the mountain. And on the other side of that is where my school was at. So it's sort of nestled in a little valley, and the school itself is terraced. It's 7 floors, and it's quite a view. I mean, every day I would see this out of the bus, and it's not your typical beach. I mean, you wouldn't want to go swimming there. You'd probably kill yourself on a rock. But what's interesting about Chile is that there's so many climates, and there's so much diversity there. I mean, I feel like I could talk to you guys for days. But today, I'd like to sort of compile, you know, sort of a summary of Chile, that I would sort of pick the things that I like best about Chile, and sort of present that to you today, because how many people out of the audience have actually been to Chile? So I'm the only one. Well, wonderful. This is great. I'll use this as an opportunity to give you guys not only my perspective of Chile, but what I think I would like to tell someone who I would like to go to Chile. So I don't just want you guys to come here today just to hear a boring old lecture of facts and, you know, facts and statements about a country. I want you guys to get motivated to actually go. So that would be, you know, the purpose of my speech here today. My mother was originally from Chile. She moved to Ecuador, and she moved to the United States. And it seems like she was always in search of her roots. I mean, she was always, every single year she would go back to Chile. Her friends, her social life, all the good times, it was in Chile for her. But I think everybody likes a little bit of privacy in their life, especially here in the U.S. I mean, we can be a little bit private. And she had her home in the U.S., and she would basically, that was her privacy. She didn't have much social life at all up here. She would basically, my parents were divorced, and she would spend most of her time in the house, and that would be about it. But when she wanted that social life, when she wanted that interaction, she would go back to Chile, and I would come along with her. And, of course, this information has already been given to you, but in 2001 was when I went to the south of Chile. And basically, it was kind of funny because when I was in school, it was in the fall. And then suddenly, when I went to Chile, it was in the summer. So we're sort of flip seasons. Suddenly my summer just got a little bit longer, and I had to wait a little bit of time before school would start. And why Chile? Well, Chile is basically my family. I have very few family members here in the United States. I have a few cousins here and there. In fact, my father is basically the only family I have here in the U.S., and you guys, because I see a lot of familiar faces now. I've only been here for a few months, and I've really come to warm up to you guys and learn to work with you guys. So it's been a great, nice little family here. Who can tell me which flag is Chile's?
Both.
Anybody know? Any guesses?
The right.
No. That. This is the state flag of Texas.
Oh, my goodness.
This is Chile's flag. So just a few months ago, or actually I think it was in 2008, the miners that were stuck in the San Jose mine, once they were celebrating with their flags, a lot of people in Texas were really excited because they're like, wait a minute, okay, well, you know, the country really seems like they're going for Texas, you know? But the United States played a key role in helping out the miners, because these miners, I'll be talking about them in a little bit, about how these guys were stuck underground for about 3 months. Now, can you imagine being stuck underground, hundreds of feet underground, and you're a miner, you're working under there, and then suddenly one of these tunnels collapses, and you're stuck under there with no bathroom, no food, maybe a little bit of running water, maybe just a few resources that you brought with you, probably about as much food as we have back there, to live on for the next 3 months. Now these guys, there was 33 of them, not only did they survive on the scarce resources they had, but every single one of them lived, and every one of them is alive today. And one by one, they went up through this little chute in this little capsule that was designed by the U.S., which is wonderful because the U.S. has great relations with Chile. Now, I'll go into a little bit of history. I don't want to get into it too much. I don't want to get you guys to fall asleep on me. But the history of Chile is sort of interesting. It was colonized by Spaniards, the Spanish. So we would say, okay, what language do they speak in Chile? Spanish, right? Well, en verdad es castellano. Castilian Spanish. It's a little bit different. It's a dialect. But thanks to these guys who came in 1536, Diego de Almagro, he's the first guy who came to Chile. And then you have Pedro de Valdivia, who established Santiago as the capital. Now, to our detriment, years later, it's going to become a little bit of a problem because I'll show in a couple slides later why Santiago being where it's at, physically, the location is a little bit of a problem. But when he found it, he said, hey, this is a great place to found a city. He thought it was beautiful, surrounded by amazing mountains that are, you know, covered with snow. There's volcanoes. You have a lot of protection. You can set up an army. You can defend this city very well. So 300 years later, it took for finally Chile to get its War of Independence, and then finally its independence from Spain. And it was independent in 1818. Now, later on, after Chile was already an independent country, it sort of came into a little bit of nudging and pushing with its neighbors. Peru and Bolivia, they really had a great market going with guano and salitre, which are these chemicals that you use, especially fertilizers. And they started to sort of fight over it, and the Chileans wanted a little bit of that market. And they basically had wars. It was basically Peru and Bolivia against Chile. And, of course, Chile won, and they took a lot of territory from Peru and Bolivia. To the Bolivians, it's even to this day, it really hurts them because they lost a lot of land on the ocean front. They used to have ocean front property, which is part of their state, their country, but they lost it after the war. And Chile still made a treaty with Bolivia and said, hey, in 1941, they made the treaty that said, you can still export your things, but you're not going to have sovereignty over this land. So I'm going to go a little bit into politics here. Chile has become, was communist in the 1970s. What's interesting about this president is that he was one of the few who was actually democratically voted into office. His name is Salvador Allende. And what's interesting about this time period, I didn't live in Chile in this time period. I wasn't even born. But I can give you my mother's perspective of what it was like, because she kept repeating these stories over and over and over again. And it's just so ingrained in my head, so as if I was there. So my mom, when she was little, she was with my grandmother, And what happened was, once U.S. companies were nationalized, U.S. companies said, we don't want any of this, we're out of here. So Ford, Coca-Cola, all these companies started to leave. The copper mines were nationalized, and it worked for a little bit, until basically the whole entire country came to a halt. Even the trucking companies stopped trucking. So imagine the United States is suddenly all the highways just froze, and then no truckers are delivering anything to Walmart. So suddenly we don't have supplies at Walmart anymore. We don't have supplies at Target or where we like to shop. So my mother would spend 2 hours in a line with the sun burning down on her, and she would have to wait for a bag of rice, or she would have to wait for some bread. Everything was rationed. And then there was sort of, some people were trying to make a little bit of money by having their own little business out of their homes, and they would do that. Of course, that lasted just a little while until the head of the military, General Augusto Pinochet, decided, you know what, it's enough of this. The country, we want to change everything around. And they decided to make a military coup. At this point, what's interesting is that half of the nation was on one side and half of it was on the other. For example, if you and I are brothers and we're in the same household, maybe you're on the leftist side and I'm on the rightist side. And we could have one family where you've got some members of them who are in the military, because Chile is a very military country. Military service is mandatory at 18 years of age for all young people. And basically, it was a civil war. So Augusto Pinochet got all of the army, all of the armed forces, and decided to go against Allende. And Allende, seeing that this was happening, he went to the White House, or La Moneda, which is what it's called, actually called the coin, but they call it the White House, you know, they call it La Moneda. And he bunkered himself in there with machine guns, and they all prepared themselves for battle. And it was quite a tragic part of Chilean history. It's one that I don't really like to talk too much about, because I don't like seeing any Chileans getting hurt. I love Chileans in general. What political views they have, I really don't care, but I don't like seeing people getting hurt. So once this happened, Pinochet sent planes over the White House and bombarded it. So it's kind of like the White House in Washington, D.C., literally getting bombed by planes.
What year was this?
1973, I believe. And the Chilean students, after Allende was taken out of office, the Chilean students who were there to sort of help the country start going in a new direction, because they needed a new economic policy. I mean, they were just in communism and socialism. So they needed to have a new economic plan, and they went for neoliberalism. And these guys were basically Chilean students studying in Chicago who helped develop that. Now, if you go real quick to this video here, I'll show just quickly what it looked like.
En el Palacio de la Moneda, Allende cumple con su promesa de que solo muertos le sacarán de aquí.
Solo acribillando cabalazos podrán impedir la voluntad de hacer cumplir el programa de Juan.
En la presión descubrida y manos de
El Palacio de la Moneda ardió por los cuatro costados. Allende había rechazado el ultimátum de las Fuerzas Armadas para rendirse y combatió hasta el final. La lucha fue muy intensa, pero tras el bombardeo del palacio, la junta militar se hizo en un día con el control del país.
Estamos pensando que...
I'll basically just translate real quick. He's basically saying Allende was attacked, Pinochet moved in and bombed the White House. That's about it. And Pinochet's basically saying here, okay, we've won, and now we're going to change the country. We're going to improve things.
Se recupere y que se desarrolle con todo su poder y su vigor.
Now, after Allende fell, that was tragically not the end, because after that, the military started persecuting all the people who were actually involved. So you had people like, who's ever heard of Pablo Neruda? Famous poet, right? He was persecuted. Have you ever heard of the last... Well, I'll mention her name first. Have you ever heard of Michelle Bachelet? She was the last president of Chile. She was persecuted, and she became president. A lot of the people who were at the head of the intellectual movements, a lot of the scholars, all the academic people, my uncle was persecuted. My uncle, he's a very smart man. He's a psychiatrist in Chile now. He went to, at that time period, he was in the streets writing graffiti on the walls, and he was, you know, heading these political movements. And the military got hold of him. But because they couldn't get hold of him first, they grabbed my mother's father, and they held on to him first. And they said, if you don't show up with this guy, we're going to kill your father. Yeah. And then that basically, the threat. Well, thankfully, in our family, because it was so divided, they had military in the family, and they had a few connections and said, hey, you know what? Take it easy on this guy. You know, we'll give you my uncle, but just kind of give him a few kicks and then let him go. And they actually managed to do that. So luckily, my mother's father did not die, neither did my uncle. And they let go of him because of those connections. On my grandmother's sister's entire family, everyone's military. Absolutely every single person. So it was quite a great connection to have. But after that, my uncle went to Belgium. And that's where he studied medicine. And then he learned French. And then he got all this education. And then once the people who were being persecuted finally could come back to Chile, that's when he came back. And now he's lived a very well, very nice life. Also have another video here. This was quite a shocking period of time for Chileans in general because they're not used to war. In fact, when I was in the McKay School, I went to the Naval Academy to have a little bit of time to decide whether I wanted to go in the military because I was headed in that direction. And I was going to become a naval cadet of Chile. You know, now I'm still pondering whether I should become a naval cadet of the U.S. I've always had this division in my own life. Should I, you know, I love the U.S. and I love Chile, but I want the best of both worlds. So where do I, I'm just sort of, you know, split across, you know, the hemispheres here. But when I went to the Naval Academy, one of the head honchos there told me, he said, you know, our army wants to pose, it's basically our modus operandi is having like a bulldog right at your front door. And we show it off to Peru, we show it off to Bolivia. And we say, hey, we've got a big, mean bulldog here, and he's going to get you if you try to hurt us. And they said, you know, we really don't want to go to war. We really don't want issues. But we're going to buy a few planes, and then suddenly Peru's going to move, and they're going to go buy a few planes. And then, you know, Bolivia, the same thing, in Argentina. Luckily, Chile's never had a confrontation with Argentina, because that would have been horrible. That would have probably been another amount of years. But if you think this just happened in Chile, it didn't. It happened in El Salvador, it happened in Peru, it happened in Bolivia, it happened in Argentina. A lot of the Latin American countries that had communism had these same type of dirty wars where people were basically desaparecido, which means made disappeared. They were executed, they were persecuted, and it's a pretty dark side of Latin America. But it happened in all of the countries. Thankfully, I can at least say that in Chile it wasn't as bad as it happened in other countries, because I think Argentina was 30,000 or so, and Chile I think it was 6,000, but just one life being lost is more than enough. So here's Bombardeo de la Moneda, which is the bombing of the White House. I just like to pause it for a second, because if you have a look where the moneda is located, you see all these buildings that are around here, all these buildings that are surrounding it, they were practically surrounded. You have the White House in a plaza, and then basically you have all these tall buildings in the center of Santiago. And you had the tanks and all these soldiers sitting in front of the White House taunting, you know, threatening the president. But at the same time, it wasn't just verbal threats. They were actually engaged in war, because all these buildings had people shooting at them. So they were shooting in all different directions. So it was quite a ensuing battle. And in Chile itself, my mother would tell me how she would be at home and she would hear gunshots going off in the street. I mean, and this is not normal. It's as if, you know, imagine Bowling Green, suddenly there's this war and then suddenly you hear gunshots going off in the middle of the street. Even for Chileans, it was quite a shock. Thank you. Okay, that's enough of that. So, the Chilean military is very, very well placed in Chilean society. Most of my friends are in the military right now. I have a lot of cousins that are in the Naval Academy. There's just so much of that influence in the Chilean society. The 21st of May is a special day because this man right here, Arturo Prat, he's one of the heroes of Chile, and he's basically one of the guys that he's like our George Washington. And Arturo Prat was during the Guerra del Pacifico, which is the War of the Pacific that I was mentioning against Peru and Bolivia. He basically jumped from the Chilean boat, his boat, La Esmeralda, onto the Huascar, which is the Peruvian boat, and he fought until he died. But he didn't necessarily win the battle with his hitting of the sword, but the war is practically over after that, and they treat him like a national hero. And this march here is where they basically commemorate that day, and they commemorate him, and all the military marches through every single division of the armed forces. And when I was in Chile, I was in the front lines right here along the side of the street. They let people stand around, and I would stand there and watch them come through. But just getting there was quite another thing, because that one part of the city was completely locked down where all these soldiers would come through and march, but everything else around it was up in smoke because there were so many people protesting about the military, so many people who just wanted to, you know, let their frustrations out because of what happened in the 1970s. And that happens every single year. Every single year they celebrate the 21st of May. You got half of the country celebrating, and you got the other half of the country protesting. If I had gone to the Naval Academy, I would have been one of those guys in the front row there, whacking at the little drum. Now, the protests in Chile happen all the time, but for some reason, they don't happen in the summer. I've always thought about it myself because Chile is so beautiful. There's so much fun things to do in the summer that it looks like everybody, even the protesters, are basically, you know, they're on leave. They're on vacation, too. They're having a good time.
They were protesting last week.
Oh, they were?
Yes, yes.
But it's not as frequent as in the winter. I think the protests also come as a good excuse to get away from work, to get away from school. Especially the students that recently, you know, just in the last few months, they were protesting. And I'll show you a quick little video of what that looks like. Because I've been caught myself in these protests, and they're not a lot of fun. They look fun from far away. But when you're actually in the protest itself, you start to smell the tear gas. And then you start to see this huge, it's like someone grabbed a water hose on steroids and started shooting it around. And they don't get that water from the tap water, they get it from wherever. So that water, once it hits you, it's pretty disgusting. So they use that on anybody who's protesting. And the thing is that there's a lot of people in Chile who want to protest peacefully. There's people who want to speak their mind, but they don't want to be violent about it. But it just so happens that the society is so mixed up that you get a lot of these guys who really do want to get violent. You get a lot of these guys that want to cause a little bit of havoc because to some of them it's in their benefit, because a lot of these stores that you see right here, this is a pharmacy, you can see that they've closed everything down because they know that these protests are going on and they don't want to have any trouble. And they don't want their store to get destroyed. Because what happens if you have this beautiful, I don't know, Barnes & Noble store with glass pane all over, and suddenly you got all these guys tossing and destroying things. They grab the you know, I remember when President Bush visited Chile, they destroyed half the city just in protest. And I hate the fact that they do that, because why destroy, you know, the environment in which you live? I mean, you have such a beautiful city, costs so much money to fix things up. You can protest a little bit more creatively than acting like an angry caveman. So this is what one of the protests looks like.
Look at that. That's, what is that, a parking sign?
Yeah.
How did they even get that out of the ground? So he's saying that flag is the same flag. That's your flag. This is our flag. We're in this together. But the police, it's not their fault. They're just doing their job. There goes the water. In Chile, I got hit by one of those water, and I'm not saying that I was protesting, but I was walking by, and I was going home after I was watching the military march, and then I got hit by the chorro de agua. So, you know,
that
you have
hurt.
To be. It hurts. And it stinks. So the cleanup after all this is just, you know, it takes days to clean up the city. But you see, the military, they don't necessarily want to hurt people. They're not shooting at anyone as they were back in the 70s. Back in the 70s, these guys, these which are mainly teenagers, you can't really tell, but you know, when I was in the protest, these are kids that are out there doing this stuff. They're not, you know, people that are about my age now or a little bit older, or most everyone in the audience. They're, you know, you guys look pretty peaceful to me. I don't think you would be out doing this. And a lot of these guys, they don't even know what they're protesting about. They interviewed some of them and said, "Why are you doing this?" And they're like, "I don't know, it seemed like a good idea at the time." You know, mob rule. These are students. Look at that dog. He likes it. And he keeps going. I mean, that's a Chilean dog. You know? This is just a reporter. Yeah, another day of the job. So Michelle Bachelet, like I said, she was one of the people who were who had to leave the country, and then she came back. And in my opinion, she was a wonderful president. I love the fact that, you know, I'm not trying to be feminist or, you know, sexist or anything, but I love the fact that she's a woman, because I think that's great, and especially it makes Chile look really great, you know, worldwide. And I think she was a great president. My sister is a doctor in Chile right now, and she got to service her. So, and she was one of the socialists. She still is a little bit more leftist than the current president, who is Sebastián Piñera. Piñera is the current president now, and he's a little bit more rightist. He's a little bit more like the guys. So you can already see, you know, she's leftist, and then suddenly we go rightist. You know, I mean, I think it was Buckminster Fuller who had a quote and said, you know, in life, you know, there's no straight lines. Straight lines only exist in school. You get a left foot, you know, you don't have a left foot and a wrong foot. No, you got a left foot and a right foot, which means you take a step with the left, and then you make a correction with the right. And then you take a step with the left and make a correction with the right. It's as simple as that. So I think that's sort of summarizes what's going on politically in Chile, sort of ping-ponging back and forth. Now, I don't even know how to describe this thing, but this is the national bird of Chile. Yeah, I think that's a beak right there, and the eyes. And this is the condor. This is the national bird of Chile. And I've never seen one in person myself. I think they live very high and sort of out of reach of just the cities. Now, el baile nacional, or the national dance of Chile, is la cueca. And I'll show you a quick little video of what that looks like. These are 2 8-year-olds. A lot of these traditions go back to the times of the Spaniards. This is the Spanish influence.
Thank you.
Now, this type of dance is a lot funner when you do it on the ground where there's no dirt. I tried doing it myself, and then I started kicking up so much dirt that it was just getting everywhere, and it was I was just a ball of, you know, haze of dust. Typical folklore music of Chile. So if you want to know what is Chilean music, you're listening to it. And you're watching the dance. A lot better than what I could do. So from the presentation ran off. Just one moment. Looks like my presentation has run for the hills. There we go. And this is another group that is extremely popular in Chile, and it's called Los Jaivas. And their music is very good. This is some more folklore music. That they're using are typical instruments of Chile, like the pan pipes, the flute. Here is called La Quinta Vergara, and it's in Viña del Mar, which is very close to where my school was at. It's very close to where I studied, and this is an annual event that goes on. It's basically like the Grammys, or, you know, you would say the main spectacular event of the year, where all the, you know, really great singers in the Latin community come along and they sing in this event. And this is the, I've been in this physical location as well. It's basically a huge concert hall. And this band has been around for a while, so these, you know, the country really gets into it when they listen to these guys sing. La Araucaria is one of the, it's the national tree of Chile, and it takes hundreds of years to grow. I mean, it's quite a spectacular thing to see in person when you're looking at trees, and if that's your thing, then it's, you know, it was my thing when I was down there. I loved looking at nature and wild, and looking at the birds, and, you know, these trees are humongous, and they take hundreds of years to grow. The copihue, my mother's favorite flower, is a beautiful flower. It's the national flower, and it grows especially in the Araucaria region, which is the seventh region where a lot of the indigenous people live. And if you ever do go to Chile and you wonder to yourself, okay, I want to buy one of these copihues, you know, can't bring it to the U.S., but let's say you wanted to have it down there, or maybe you wanted to give it to your spouse or something. If someone comes up to you and says, oh, yeah, we've got green, we've got yellow, we've got purple, we've got all these crazy colors, don't believe them. Because they will invent, you know, we had that happen to us, and you know, they're pretty thrifty. So a lot of the colors that they have are pink, you know, white, white and pink. Those are basically the, the main colors. Now in Google Earth, I just want to show you a little bit of Chile real quick. Can everyone see that all right? Okay, so basically Chile is this long, skinny thing on the coast of Chile. And, I mean, the coast of South America. Now the thing is, Chile used to be, you know, when I was studying history in Chile, it used to be over here. But the thing is that this is the Andes Mountains. This is a humongous coastal range with active volcanoes, you know, sleeping dormant volcanoes. And over the years, Argentina, little by little, started taking piece by piece their territory, taking it away from Chile. And Chile, not wanting to fight with Argentina, said, okay, that's fine. You take a little bit more and a little bit more. Maybe someone can't nudge you over the cliff. I mean, they can't push you over the cliff, but they can sort of nudge you over the cliff little by little. And Chile sort of is in that position. They've been kind of like with their neighbor pushing behind them, and they're just staring at the ocean. And the war with Peru and Bolivia basically got all this territory here added to Chile. So originally it's from here. It's kind of like that, straight down. And then after the war, this was acquired, and then with Argentina, it got skinnier and skinnier. Now, one of the added benefits of having this, because they can't just get depressed and say, oh, we're losing all this land. Well, actually, one of the beauties of it is because it's so long, it just hits so many different climates, up and down. You've got some of the most arid deserts in the entire world here in Atacama. The desert of Atacama, I think, gets like 1 millimeter of water per year. If we zoom in, basically Chile is divided up into regions. And I'll be going over those regions. I'll tell you a little bit about these regions. And I've visited every single one of them in my time when I lived in Chile. So I've seen Chile from the bottom to the very top. Iquique is a really interesting place to go to because it's got a zona franca, which is a duty-free, like when you go to the airport and you don't have to pay taxes. Well, the whole city's like that there. So a lot of people like to go there to get cars and cologne and buy all kinds of goodies there. And some of these are the active volcanoes that are actually going on right now. Just a couple of years ago, Chaitén erupted, and it literally exploded and let hundreds of thousands of metric tons of ash into the air, and a lot of it went over to the Argentinian side, but the city of Chaitén was basically covered in ash. And these are the ones that are actually active. There's many, many more that are, you know, not active. It's kind of like, imagine walking through Bowling Green, and then at the top of the hill, you see this little, you know, haze of smoke kind of like popping out of the land, and it's an active volcano. I mean, you feel comfortable because you're going to your daily commute, and suddenly, you know, you can't imagine one of these things exploding because that would be tremendous. But Chile has a lot of earthquakes, and I thought it was kind of a funny coincidence that we have an earthquake drill that supposedly might be going on today in little old Kentucky where we never have earthquakes, which is kind of interesting because I'm talking about probably one of the most highest activity of earthquake countries in the world. I think the amount of earthquakes that they get in Chile are probably way more than California. In fact, there's earthquakes going on in Chile right this second as we're here. There's earthquakes going on all day long. So you imagine suddenly feel an earthquake, you're like, wow, we had an earthquake. Well, actually, we're having earthquakes all day long because of the tectonic plates that are pushing, and they're constantly pushing all day long onto the main tectonic plate. This is the volcano Chaitén, that one that erupted just a couple years ago. And then this is sort of like how I was talking about all the different regions. So I spent most of my time here in this region, which is pretty big. And can anyone guess? Never mind. It takes only about 2 hours to cross Chile. Now, it'll take a little bit longer up here, maybe 4 hours. But from here to here, it takes about 2 hours just to get across. And I spent most of my time here and also in the Región Metropolitana, which is where my sister went to school and studied medicine.
What about now, lengthwise?
Lengthwise?
How long it would take?
Just from here to here, 1,200 miles?
I think so.
Yeah? Yeah, it's very long.
Just from Coquimbo, the fourth region, to the first one at the top, it takes 20 hours drive.
Yeah, 20 hours drive from Coquimbo
to Tarapacá.
Wow. Now I remember when I went on the buses this way, I was sleeping the whole way, so I wasn't counting the hours.
I used to go to college over there. When I decided to go see my parents, it was a big decision because 20 hours one way.
Every time you have to see your family, you have to go back the 20 hours, right? Mm-hmm. Wow, that's incredible. Yeah. Can we give her a hand?
The port region.
Oh, wonderful.
That's where I came from.
Oh, nice to meet you.
Well, nice to meet you. Hello,
Mr. Roger.
And I got my Chilean flag.
Oh, wonderful. I didn't even bring my Chilean flag.
I'm always glad to hear, I'm so glad that you're doing this because not many people know much about Chile.
Yeah.
Claudia here and her kids are from Chile too, and we are very little community here. I know in Nashville and Louisville is a big one. So I'm always feel so good and proud to hear about, and
absolutely.
I like to hear other people what they think.
Yeah.
But I haven't met with a lot of Americans, they love, absolutely love Chile.
Yes.
And
there's just so much.
When you see everything, you might not like everything, but it's good. So
there's so much that we want to help you with.
I don't know
that?
If you have, so this is the Chilean flag.
Sure.
Somebody will know. This is the Texas? No, it's not a Texas. This is the Chilean flag.
This is the authentic Chilean flag. Yes. So we're not celebrating Texas here.
Yeah, that's not Texas.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So just from this distance from here to here, it takes 12 hours.
Yeah, then, I'm sorry, the mm-hmm. for the
sure.
four to Biobío, the eighth, there are almost 9 hours.
So nine
you
hours.
Keep adding.
It's a long drive. Mm-hmm. So you're better off, if you can take the bus and sleep, that's my way to travel. So, best way to do it. Or like my mom, my grandmother lives here, but my mom just bought some territory right here, this little nook. And this is where she has her house now. They just built a house last year, and they travel, extensively. My sister right now is in this region as well, and she's a doctor at the Klinik Alemana, so which is the German clinic down there. Another interesting feature about the south of Chile is the fact that a lot of this region has German settlers. There's so much European influence in Chile. They call it, a lot of South America, they call it the European cone because there's so much European influence. You have Spanish, Italian, but you have a lot of the Germans. Why? Because after World War II, that's where a lot of them went. And they have, I love going down there because they make the most delicious Kuchen. Their pie is just to die for.
What is the temperature from the top to the bottom?
It's kind of hard to describe because really the temperature in a lot of Chile, it oscillates so much from daytime to nighttime. You may be in this region, my mom was telling me that it went from very, very cold at night to suddenly very, very hot during the day. And that's exactly what would happen in this region here because the sand isn't capable of holding all that heat and it just, dissipates into the atmosphere. So the temperature oscillates drastically, a lot. Down here in this area, it wasn't so much.
So at the very bottom, would it be really, really cold? Yeah.
This is near Antarctica down here.
Yeah. Very rainy.
And what's interesting about Chile is that it's sort of like an island because if you think about it, you've got some of the most arid deserts in the world here, and then you've got the Pacific Ocean, which is all of this here, and then you've got the Andes Mountains that I think run from all the way from Colombia all the way down. And they go all the way down here, all the Andes Mountains. So you've got Andes Mountains on one side, you've got pure oceanfront on the other, you've got the deserts in the north, and you've got forests here, and then you've got glaciers down here. So you're completely surrounded. It is sort of like an island. And then the valley of Chile actually has, you've got the mountains, and then it goes down, and you have coastal mountains, and then you've got the valley. And let me check here. This is me when I was, you see that little snow-covered volcano here? This is Lago Chungará, which is in the very top north. And then you got Easter Island, which runs all the way across. I'll show you guys real quick where that's at. Basically, there it is. So, this is the very top north of Chile. You've got Atacama, Coquimbo, and then you go all the way across here, And there it is. This tiny little land that's way out there. And this is where you see the Eastern Island heads. That so many people, they talk so much about this island, and I think it's wonderful, but Chile has so much more to offer. You know, there's just so much going on in Chile that, you know, they talk so much about this island because it's got like the Stonehenge looking heads on the island, which is, you know, by the locals, that's great. But I personally think, you know, you've got so much more to talk about Chile itself. The geysers, del Tatio, I also visited, and I remember waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And the guy's like, we got to get on the buses. We got to go because we got to catch these things. And then suddenly we get in the car, and suddenly this guy looked like a mad taxi driver from New York City. And he's just driving so fast around the curves. And suddenly I scrape some of the ice off the glass, and I look down, and it's just like a 200-foot drop. And this guy's just sliding around, you know, these roads. And some of the roads around these mountains are very, very narrow. So I actually wanted to put some ice back and not look at that because it was quite scary. But once we got there, you know, these geysers are, I'm not sure if I'm even pronouncing it right. Geysers?
Something
like, we call them geysers here. Yes. And in Chile, they call them geysers. See, I knew that my Chilean influence was catching me there. Okay. But they're absolutely beautiful. Now, one person actually did die here. It was a French explorer or French tourist, and they actually fell inside one of these things because the water is extremely hot. It boils, and it only lasts for a few hours. But the thing is, it smells like rotten eggs there. And I think it's a lot of the chemicals that are in the composition of the land. Does anyone recognize Chuquicamata? One of the largest copper mines in the world, if not the largest. And it's open, so no one can get stuck in there. That's great. And it's huge. You would think a crater from outer space hit that. But no, that's just guys that have been digging like ants straight down into the ground. And then you've got Valle de la Luna, which is a very romantic place. If you want to visit a romantic place in Chile, I would take your spouse, your loved one, to Valle de la Luna, because you can go up here where this guy's taking the picture is, you know, basically, you climb up this hill of sand, and then you're here, and you watch the sunset, and you just see all this array and nuances of amazing colors and just beautiful change. It just changes every second, the sun. You know, it's just not, you just can't look at a sunset and say, well, that's a pretty sunset. This is a sunset. I mean, you look around, and you just see the reflections off all the land, and you feel like you're not even on planet Earth anymore. You feel like you're on Valle de la Luna, which is a valley of the moon. Did you know that there's flamingos in Chile? And they're in the north. A lot of these, a lot of the parts of the north of Chile have these sort of reservoirs of water that come from the mountains. When the mountains melt, all that water goes straight down, and these mountains are thousands of meters up into the sky, you know, thousands of feet up into the sky. And when that melts, it comes down, and it becomes a torrential river going straight through. And then these guys really like it. Copiapó, this is where the miners were saved from, San Jose. And there's the new president of Chile. This is Sebastián Piñera. This helped a lot of his popularity, especially in Chile, because it was sort of declining. And when this happened, it really sort of helped boost it up a little bit. And then this picture I took from the beach in La Serena. And this is when I was just relaxing with some friends. We basically, one of the funnest things to do in Chile is to go backpacking. And really, you have no direction. You just go wherever you want to go. And with four friends of mine and my mom's, you know, undivided permission, I just went ahead and went on this trip. And it was the funnest thing in the world because we were like explorers, discovering Chile for ourselves. And I recommend that all of you do that wherever you go, especially if you go to Chile. You know, and later on in the presentation, I'll give you a few little pointers about what you might want to do to protect yourself in Chile. Because you see me the way I am right now, this is how I will travel to Chile. You know, and I'll explain a little secrets, little pointers and tips how you can protect your money, how you can protect yourself. And this is me, very pale. This is Coquimbo right here? Yeah, this is all Coquimbo. I think this is a cross, right?
It is a cross. So you can get into it and see the whole city. The whole
yeah.
Town.
Can you go up?
Yes, you can all the way to the top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And then this is me next to one of those monuments. Roberto is basically like a mascot in Chile. He's a donkey, and he's like a drunken donkey because they have a cartoon, and basically they say Pisco is like one of Chile's national drinks.
Mm-hmm.
A commercial?
Yeah.
And they basically have him sitting there all day long, and you can take pictures with him and stuff. But they basically, you know, make it look like he's, you know, this drunken donkey, and you drink pisco in Chile because it's the national drink. And what's interesting about that region is that, look at all this. Look at how dry all this is. I mean, it's like you would not survive half an hour up here, you know? But then suddenly look at all this vegetation. It's like an oasis. It's amazing. And the reason is because all the water flows down here. In fact, there's a little river going through. And it catches a lot of, all these minerals precipitate, and this is great for vegetation because you have a lot of fertilizers, natural fertilizers in there that help give the plants their food. And this is, you know, some of these areas are like the breadbasket of Chile. Up here in front, I've got just some of the products that you can get from Chile, you know, like avocados. These, oh, I love them. If you don't like the taste of them, you can use them on your face because they're great for facials. But I absolutely love them. And, you know, we've got blueberries, and we've got plums, and so many more. That's just what I could find
grapes
yesterday.
Grapes are coming from this region.
Exactly. And wine. From this region,
the
grapes.
Wine.
The wine. And the pisco. Pisco is kind of like a spirit drink, but from grapes, which is kind of interesting. It's like, you know, vodka, I think it comes from potato or something, but pisco comes from grapes, and it's a spirit. And you can see how these things start to go up the mountain.
You can find it.
Actually, I did. I really like, well, I don't like pisco by itself. It's just too strong for me. It's like whiskey, you know, it's like you don't want to drink whiskey by itself. But you can have a piscola, you know, mix some Coca-Cola with pisco, and it tastes, you know, you start to feel it after about 30 seconds. And then, you know, and then you have pisco sour, which I'll show what that looks like later on. And there's a river that's running through here. And you can see basically how the vegetation starts to develop. And look at this. These vineyards are going straight up a mountain. You know, like in movies in Hollywood, you see vineyards are usually like sort of on hills or, you know, kind of flat. These things are going, I can't imagine going up there to get grapes. You know,
where they do a lot of cactus plantation too.
Cactus plantation as well?
Yeah, it's called pickle pears.
Mm-hmm. The fruit from the cactus?
Yes.
Yeah, I tried that. What was the name of it? I don't remember.
Pickle pears is called
pears? Tuna. Tuna, that's right. Tuna is a delicious little fruit that comes from a cactus. So you wouldn't expect that you could eat a fruit from a cactus, but they're pretty tasty.
Sometimes you find it in Walmart.
For a very short period of time, right?
Yes.
Yeah. This is a picture of the sunset in La Serena. Let me go ahead because I think I'm short on time. Yeah. Well, let me just speed it up. And this is another picture of a beautiful sunset. What I love about Chile is just the ocean just seems like it goes on forever, you know? And it's so violent. That's one of the most amazing things, that you can sit there and look at the ocean, and it's such a violent ocean. You see the waves crashing on the rocks, and suddenly you have this emergency because there's a tsunami alert, and then suddenly or Operación Daisy, you know, everyone's freaking out because, you know, there's a tsunami possibly coming, which, you know, doesn't happen very frequently, but there's so much violentness to this, you know, nature, but at the same time it's amazing to appreciate. And then here's just, you know, snow-covered mountains. You know, plenty of those. What's interesting is that there's also a Scottish St. Andrews Society in Chile, and I was also a member of that. So it was interesting that they were having haggis, the Scottish, in Chile. And I was like, whoa, this is so cool. I'm having whiskey, haggis, with Scottish Chileans. And then here's some more mountains. This is more like in the fifth region. This is just a tunnel. And this is me in the McKay School. If you guys are interested later on and you'd like to know what the McKay School looked like, this big book here is basically the entire history of the McKay School, basically everything about it and the infrastructure. When I went to the McKay School, I played rugby. I was also one of the prefects. And that was what I'm doing right now. It's basically, you know, just a progression of after so many years. I would say that because of my experiences in Chile, it really helped mold who I am today. If I had not experienced what I experienced in Chile, I think I would be a completely different person. I don't think I would even be speaking publicly, for that matter, because, you know, it's kind of like in class, they point this cannon in your face and they say, talk, you know, and they expect you to be very disciplined. I remember the first day of school coming back from the U.S. because in Chile, guess what everyone does in class? imagine you go to class, and then suddenly everyone's sitting down having a little chat. The professor comes in. Everyone stands up. Good morning, sir. Good morning, miss. That's what everyone says. Very respectful. So what did I do the first day of school when I came back to the U.S.? I stood up, saw my professor. Good morning, sir. I look around and no one's standing. You know, no one's. I felt so awkward. It was just so weird. But these are my friends that I was with over there. And then there's some more snow-covered mountains, the ocean. And this little area here, my sister loves this little. This is a biological museum, university place. But it's my sister. I just have so many flashbacks when I see these pictures, and I feel like it's home. Because I have my home here in the U.S., but suddenly there's a part of it somewhere back in there in that, you know, intellectual world that just sort of pulls me back to reality and says, hey, you know, you've got another place in Chile. And the zoológico in Quilpue, my mom just said they just had a baby hippo born, which is pretty close to Valparaíso. Gabriela Mistral, she's a Chilean poet, educator, and diplomat. And this is the museum where you can go to see all her artifacts from her entire life. And I also went there. They also have a spirit named after her, drink. Pablo Neruda is one of the guys that left the country, and then during that time, his homes were sort of sacked. A lot of the properties, a lot of his personal belongings were destroyed. A lot of the things were taken out by the military, and they sort of just trampled all over his personal artifacts. So it's really sad, but at the same time, you think about it, because it's great because they got together and they decided to go back to that time period. I mean, if anyone's seen that movie Blast from the Past, we've got that family living underground for 50 years and then suddenly, or 30 years, and they come out, and then suddenly they rebuild the house just like it outside. This is kind of like what they did with his homes. This one's in Valparaíso. I visited that one. Casa de Isla Negra, I also visited. And La Chascona, which is another one that he had in Santiago. Now, some places where you could visit, Concon, for example, is a nice place because it's a little bit north, about 15, 20 minutes north of Viña del Mar. But you can have some really delicious seafood menus there. I mean, there's just so much in here. You know, have you ever had like those Campbell's soups and then you taste like it's mainly potatoes and like cream and stuff? And then maybe there's a little bit of clam in there, you know? And here it's like you're eating a whole clam with like, you know, the shrimp and little baby squid, calamari, I think they're called, and some amazing things that I don't even know what they are in there. I just eat it because it tastes good and it's squishy when you chew on it. And then my mom in the south of Chile, they have like a luau, which is sort of like this Hawaiian tradition where they get together and they dig a hole in the ground and they basically stick all these stones in the ground and they set this fire up and the fire warms the stones and then they throw all this food on top, meat, you know, seafood, all kinds of stuff and stuff that they caught with their bare hands. Even me, because I would see these little clams, I wouldn't see them, they would be under the beach like this and the clams would be just hiding under there and you know how you would know that they were there? Suddenly this little squirt showed up like that out of the ground. And then you go digging in there, and there's a clam. And then you pull it out, you know, and then you cook it. And then that was as easy as that. You could catch your own food right there on the beach. That's where my mom's at right now. So she doesn't do a lot of the catching. She tells my sister to do all that work. She gets her to do all the hard work. But when they get together and they have these curanto al hoyo, what it's called, basically, they throw all the seafood in there, they cook it up, they cover it with layers of really thick leaves and bags of dirt, which the dirt doesn't really get mixed in with the food, but it creates pressure, and it's like a little cook pot out of the ground. And then they peel off the layers, they take everything off, and then suddenly you've got yourself an awesome picnic out of the ground, and people bring little stumps, and they drink some Chilean wine, and, you know, this is just a typical thing that people do down there. Some of the vineyards that you can visit are Casablanca, Concha y Toro, San Pedro, El Carmen. My mom was like, the best one is El Carmen because her name's Carmen. Now, this is Santiago on a regular day. The pollution is not that bad. You can see a little bit of haze right here. But like I was saying in the beginning of my presentation, Diego, when Santiago was founded as a city, they didn't realize that it was going to be surrounded with cars, that there was going to be so many cars and there was going to be so much pollution captured in like a little, as if it was contained in there. And this is what it looks like with the pollution. Suddenly your 1,000-foot-meter mountains disappeared. You know, especially if you're a pilot flying around there, that's not a good idea. But the pollution creates a lot of heat. You know, the greenhouse gases get trapped in there. It traps in the UV rays, and it just makes the whole city really hot. And if you're a smoker at all, the smoke, it hurts you even more because of the pollution in the air. But a lot of people suffer from respiratory problems. Usually in the summer it's not so bad. You have what's called smog in the winter, which is pretty bad because it's mixed with water now. It's more humid. Now that we're going to the next region down. This is the sixth region, and these are just a few shots of that region. And you can see how the beaches start to change. You start to see different kinds of plants, different kinds of brush and shrubbery there that you wouldn't necessarily see in the other pictures of beaches that I showed you, because the climate starts to change. Here's the Parque Inglés in Región del Maule. Forest and beaches. Look at this beach, how it's so much different. How the sand is changing colors now. The sand is a little bit more darker, and there's less shrubbery, and there's, you know, different kinds of rocks. So as you experience Chile for yourself, you're going to look around and see how the environment itself changes so much from one little region. You know how in Europe you can visit so many countries in a short period of time? Well, in Chile you can visit so many climates and so many different varieties of flora and fauna in a short period of time. Pucón, picture's coming out a little blurry, but I went skiing in Pucón. One of my favorite activities to do in Chile is to go snowboarding and skiing. Pucón is a great place to go, and also in Santiago during the winter. Salto de Laja, I went swimming down here, and this is a really nice little place. People get together, and if you just stand here for maybe about 30 seconds, you're going to be completely soaked just from all the mist. So you're saying, I'm not getting in the water, but you're going to get wet. Araucanía, in Chile there's a lot of indigenous population. You know, we have like the Cherokee Indians here in the U.S. Over there they also have indigenous people like the Diaguitas, you know, like the Mapuches, and they live mainly in this region here. Temuco is the capital of this region, and I'm not sure if I brought, yes, I did. This stuff right here is kind of new to the market. Y'all are welcome to come by and smell it. You can't buy it anywhere here in the United States, because it's called merquén, and it's made by the Mapuches. And what they do is they basically ground up chilies, they smoke it, they add coriander, and they have their special little mix. And when you can add this to your barbecue and give it a heck of a smoky flavor to it. You want to be very careful because it's strong stuff. But it's just now going into the international market. It's just now starting to be available to everyone else. So I'm one of the lucky few who has some here, so you know, don't overrun me for it. but my mom gave me some, and you know, it's great. These are the Mapuches, a typical Mapuche man and woman, and that's the region, you know, pointing out where exactly in Chile it's from. This little area here, this is Valdivia. We're going to the next region down, so that would be the one below that, below the red, and that's the 10th region. And Valdivia is one of the cities there. And Valdivia, in this little area, I walked through this market, and it's a really cool market because suddenly you get these like sea lions that are humongous. These guys are big. They're like elephants in the water. And suddenly they just, you know, perch up on this little landing here, and you can just throw them some bread, or, you know, if you don't give them something good, they'll just look at you with a stink eye. But, you know, they'll come up, and you can literally see them just relaxing there. And the city itself is gorgeous. And I believe Valdivia also suffered a really bad earthquake and tsunami in the 1960s, I believe. So practically the entire city was destroyed. But they've rebuilt it, and it's a really great tourist attraction. Puerto Montt, this is getting a lot closer to where my mom's at right now. Puerto Montt is a very big city. You're going to get a lot of European people there. A lot of cruise ships will come into Puerto Montt. It's a port town, and the seafood there is phenomenal. I mean, you show up, go to Angel Mall, and you can have some really great seafood. You know, it's just so delicious. And if you don't like seafood, after your trip to Chile, you'll love it. Because they'll force it in you somehow. Puerto Varas is the next place down, where basically it's a really great tourist attraction as well. This is where you have a lot of German population. In fact, my sister, you know, the clinic where she works at is called the German Clinic, Clinica Alemana. And they work, there's a lot of German people there, and you can go skiing as well. Frutillar also, there's a volcano that you can see from there. It's a nice little place that's only about like 30 minutes from the other one. And Kuchen, this is the pie. that I was talking about. That's so good. And then we go down to the 11th region. And here's just a few shots of what it looks like down there. It starts to, have you noticed how the topography, the geography and everything starts to change a little bit? You know, you start to see different types of shrubs and bushes, and I don't know, I guess I'm just weird because I notice these things, but, you know, it has a lot to do with the climate. So you were asking about, you know, temperature differentiations. Well, the temperatures here are different. The climate here is totally different than it would be in the desert of Atacama, where the flamingos are at. And then here, Rio Baker, you know, look at how even the color of the water starts to change. And you have these beautiful snow-capped mountains, and the reason this water is even here is thanks to these snow-capped mountains, because once they start to melt, all that stuff starts coming down, and it goes from the Andes Mountains to the ocean. And then at the very bottom of Chile, you have glaciers, tremendous amounts of glaciers. And these are just some typical animals that you would see in Chile. Like I mentioned, another place you could go visit would be Torres del Paine. So if you're kind of curious about what other places you might be able to go visit, you got all these postcards here of different places where I've been to, and you can basically look at them and say, I wouldn't mind going there or there. This one right here is my mom's favorite. This is her favorite bird, which is a cisne de cuello negro. She just loved them. And there's just so much nature down there that it's amazing. Like, my mom at night, she can hear dolphins called toninas that come in through this little stretch of water that mixes with fresh water. And for some reason, they like it in there. And she'll hear these little dolphins coming through. I played rugby down there. I played soccer. I also played tennis. Chile loves their soccer. You know, don't touch their soccer. But the thing is, they also, indulge in a little bit of tennis. They also have a pretty good rugby team. And there's a lot, my mom's saying that right now, there's a lot of foreign surfers that are showing up on the beach. Because those, like I said, those waves are really violent. But if you look at the California coast, it's kind of similar to the Chilean coast, because the waves are pretty big and pretty good for surfing on. Chile was in the World Cup. You got that's what the uniform looks like, the team. And I'm going to give you all guys something you can take home. I hope I've entertained you today, but I would also like to teach you a little bit of Spanish. So for everyone who works in the library, repeat after me. Together, please. Yo trabajo en la biblioteca. What did you just say?
I work in the library.
There you go. How hard was that? And then after that, soy bibliotecario. I'm a librarian. What is the education like in Chile? There's a lot of private schools. And that's not saying that there's a lot of rich people going to private schools. It's not that. It's just that in general, you know, it's along with that military tradition. It's along with the way the government has set up. And they really want to give the population education. The students are protesting for free education. But their way of protesting is showing how uneducated they are by destroying the city. But at the same time, there's so many private schools. A typical morning, you know, in Viña or Valparaíso, when I go out to the city, I look around and I see tons of kids, you know, like your age, you know, or a little bit younger than me, maybe like your age, and they're all dressed up just like the way I am. Uh-huh. This is how I would go to school every day. You know, I wear my coat, you know, and then I would wear, this is my McKay school tie. So this is the actual tie that I would wear to school every day. My you know, dark shoes that I play soccer in, and you know, during breaks. And we'd get two recesses every day up until the 12th grade. I mean, how cool was that? I got recess in the 12th grade. You know? And then, you know, and it also, they were very disciplined to make everyone be outspoken, you know, have good manners, and, you know, salute the professor when they come in. There's mandatory military service. And then I'm not sure how all the private schools are in Chile, but my private school was, you know, very small. You know, there's a lot of students in there. It seemed kind of packed, but we all seemed to have a really good interaction with the professor. There was no one, you know, they didn't really like it when you were quiet. They wanted, you know, everyone participating.
Is the military service mandatory for male and female?
I believe it's just males.
Just male.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they can excuse for help with that.
You can be excused.
Mm-hmm.
If you're getting, you know, going to college, you're getting educated, or you have a physical handicap, you know. And what they teach you, you know, a lot of my friends went and they taught them to march, which we already did in school, you know, and they taught them how to handle a rifle, you know, how to be more proper and a few other things. But other than that, you know, it was just like a 3-week period of time, I think. It wasn't very long. The education in Chile, I believe, differs a lot from the U.S. education. I mean, we have public school systems here that are great. There's so much technology and things that are available here that they don't necessarily have in Chile. But the discipline that they have, the focus, you know, having every student looking at you in the eye is extremely important down there. And that gives everyone a different kind of education. And everyone down there wants to go to the U.S. or wants to go to Europe to do their graduate degree. So everyone's, you know, parents, the community, everyone pushes for their kids to get educated. You know, here we're in the U.S. and we feel, you know, maybe, you know, we'll even go to a college and the college is great. But in Chile, you know, it's like their dream to go to a college in the United States, you know. What I'm getting from this education here in the U.S., you know, some people can only dream of in Chile. So that's why I feel so fortunate to be here with you guys and to be able to share this information with you. Why the McKay School? Well, it's one of the top schools in Chile. My mom, you know, did a little bit of research. There's another school in Santiago, which is like its competition, but it's a great school. I mean, it's all boys, which was just such a drag on me because, you know, I missed having that co-ed feeling in the U.S. schools. But it definitely helped me keep more concentrated when it came to my studies. So, and then our motto was this, Vinci qui si vinci, which means vence quien se vence. It's basically the motto that says, he conquers who conquers himself. So basically, my idea about it, the way I see it is, you know, in life you're going to deal with a lot of problems. You're going to deal with a lot of frustrations and things of stress and things that's going to just affect you in so many different ways. But if you keep doing the same thing, nothing's going to change. You know, it's always going to be the same thing going on. You have to change yourself. You have to look into yourself and say, what can I change about myself? Maybe I should get up a little earlier. Maybe I should improve my reading skills or my speaking public skills. And another thing that I recommend everyone do, which I learned in the Chile, is to keep a goals list. This is my daily goals list. I keep it in my pocket. It looks kind of ugly, but hey, it's my ideas. And then I check them off. And then if I check off something big, I'll give myself a little celebration, a little pat on the back. So that's how I get things done. So Vinci qui si vinci is something that is so ingrained in me, and that's something that I learned down there thanks to my education in Chile. Also, carpe diem, seize the day. I also learned that down there. So setting those goals, write down what you want, and you will achieve it. Also, always do more than you get paid for to make an investment in yourself. Some people just get by doing the minimum. But that's not my philosophy. My philosophy is what I learned in the McKay School is that you work extra hard not to impress people or not to make, you know, maybe get a promotion. It's more to develop the skills so that you make an investment in you. And you, as a person, can progress and grow and change. So in the library, they say old Bible ideas, if you search, you will find. Finding is only reserved for those who search. And I believe that, especially here in the library, because we are surrounded by a wealth of books, you know, a wealth of 9 stories of information that we're just sitting on, and so many valuable librarians here who can help. So on projects, I believe that you should only start them when they're finished, which means always have things projected in your mind. Never start your day, you know, without your goals list. Say, okay, I'm going to build this house today. I already know what it looks like, so I'm going to start laying the foundation and working on it. You don't just go out and lay the foundation without knowing what you're building. I'll go ahead and skip forward because I think I'm running out short on time. Now, if you want to go to Chile, this is a screenshot of studentuniverse.com. I like Student Universe because I'm a student, and I don't even know if the prices are less, but it sounds cool, you know, buying from them. And it seems like the prices are not that bad, but $1,300, you know, for a trip to Chile, you know, in September, which is probably one of the lowest prices that you can get. That's where my mom always goes. If you were to go now, you know, everybody's having fun down there. It's the summer. All the kids are out in the street. Everybody's having a good time. It's going to be a lot more expensive. I think the prices I looked up were like $3,000 to go right now. But my mom went, she actually went in December, and her ticket was still only $1,300, and she's been there for a couple months now. So you can stay at hotels. I recommend hostels because hostels, quality is not as great as a hotel, but you save so much more money, and you get to soak up all that atmosphere. Do's, to be smart and chilly, be vigilant and cognizant of what's going on around you. Keep your money and jewelry put away. My mom has been assaulted various times. She's lost her jewelry that she loves so much. Thankfully, I'm the only person in my family who has not been assaulted. I mean, I wish no one in my family was ever assaulted. But I think it's because of my philosophy and because of how I'm aware of what's going on around me. It happens. And usually it happens to people who don't really think about what they're doing, and then they just let it happen to them. I saw this one man who was talking on the cell phone, smoking a cigarette, had an umbrella in one hand, and he's just sitting here talking like this, and then, you know, he's just like, you know, like shooting fish in a bucket. You know, the guy came around and grabbed the cell phone and took off. You know, he set himself up for it. You know, if you are just aware of what's going on around you, that won't happen. I walked through the streets of Valparaíso many times by myself at night. And that's because I was commuting back from school, especially when I was studying for what's the equivalent of the SAT or the PSU down there. And I learned I learned these things mainly through experience. Don't give money necessarily away to people in the street, because when you pull out your wallet, or have a pocket designated for money giving away pocket, because you pull out your wallet in the street, it may be gone in less than a flash of a second. Don't pack yourself over with cameras and bags. The way I would travel with Chile is with this. I've got my little bag here. I basically got my camera. I got a map. Got my camera. And I got a GPS, because GPSs do work in Chile. You can set them up to do that. So that would really help you out if you're renting a car or something. And then this is all I would carry, you know. All the other stuff I could leave at the hotel. But if I'm traveling around and I want to go explore somewhere, I want to explore with all my senses. I'm not just going to explore with what's going on the map. I want to be aware. I want to see where I turned, and I want to see what kind of people are walking around me. So, for example, if someone were to assault me right now, and they were to say, "Give me your money," this is what I'd do. This is a decoy wallet. There's nothing in it. There is money in it. I've got $100 in here, but to make them happy. But I'm not losing what's more valuable to me, which is, if I'm in a foreign country, I keep that in my front pocket, because this is my passport right here. This is my actual passport, and I've got my more money in there, and basically I've got my own important documents, which you really need to keep on you. So if you get robbed, give them that one. And if you got a pickpocket, which there are lots of pickpockets, you know, you can keep your hand on your money, the important things. You may not necessarily feel someone pickpocketing this. My sister just lost her iPhone a few months ago. So. And if the worst happened and you lost this, you lost everything, then what you can do is go old-fashioned and keep your money in your socks. But that'll never happen necessarily. But I'm just overprotectionist.
I don't know where you.
I will say
the backpack should be here.
That's a really good idea. That's a really good idea. That's a really great idea. Thank you for that. Yeah. But what I did learn about cars, when you're driving, you sometimes should be a little careful about leaving your purse in the car, even when you're in it, because a lot of women had a rock thrown in the car, bust the back windshield, and take this purse out, because it was just laying in the back. So it's good to keep that on you as well. Okay, so don't walk around with your headphones and keep yourself distracted. You know, a lot of people in the U.S. are in their own world, so it's good to be aware of what's going on around you. And then we've got a few drinks real quick. Colemono, which is a monkey's tail. It's a national drink they drink during Christmas. You've got pan de pascua, what they typically eat with it. Tea time, which in Chile, they don't drink coffee, they drink tea. And they always have it a las once, which little translation means at 11 o'clock, but it's never at 11. It's actually at 5 or 4 or 3. And that's thanks to the Spaniards. Chirimoyas, a fruit down there. Paltajas, I've got up front there. You got cherries, strawberries, cantaloupe, watermelon, all kinds of things from Chile. You get no pineapple or bananas. Mango in the north. You get damascos, which are apricots, grapes. And this guy, you know, he's drinking with glacier ice. He's drinking his pisco. This is the pisco sour, what it looks like right here. And it's very, very delicious. And then you've got the wines. I've got a wine up here to show. And then chicha de manzana is another thing that people like to drink. That they, you know, usually they make it themselves out of apples. Humitas is a little pastry that's made out of corn or maize, which is basically the corn in Chile is not like your typical American corn that you have up here. The kernels are a lot thicker, and they're, you know, it's a much bigger type of corn. It's a different type of corn. It comes out different, but you can make the food kind of similar over here. You use corn husks to mold them.
Porotos con rienda o con tallarines. My mom would say con rienda because it's kind of like, you know, when you're on a little, on like Santa Claus with the little handles.
And that is, you know, the food down there is not that bad. Pastel de choclo is always made in a greda of clay. That's the way they traditionally do it. Empanadas is the national food that they always have when they're celebrating the Independence Day. Sopaipillas is what you traditionally eat, that pebre. I made pebre back there. That's usually what you eat sopaipillas with, but I just brought chips this time. Caldo de vicuña, pollo al jugo, ensalada chilena, you know, cortada la pluma. My mom told me it's called cortada la pluma, but it's kind of like julienne, you know. They cut it real nice and thin. So, and it's usually, it's, you know, Vidalia onions go great with it, and cilantro and tomato. It's really basic ingredients, but it tastes great. It's so fresh. So, I know I have just a little bit of time left, but real quick, have a little spread, girl. I did study in culinary school as well. That's where I get all this neat stuff from. Now, pebre is made very, there's so many different ways that people make it. I'm just giving you sort of like a basic standard way of making it. Now, I got this little guy at Kroger, and basically this swishes around and chops it up pretty good. Just for the sake of time, it helps out a lot. So I just throw a Roma tomato in there, and I will throw a garlic clove. Got the garlic clove going in there. And then here you've got the, this is another neat little thing that I got from Kroger as well that's pretty cool because it helps take out the core. And if your kids like to drink juice, it filters it out and you can literally drink it like a juicer, a pretty good juicer. A little bit of lemon in there without all the seeds and all the, you know, material that goes in there. And then here, a little bit of cilantro. Cilantro is best if you don't beat it up. You know, parsley, you can mince it up, beat it up all you want, but you never do that to cilantro. You want to keep that flavor. A little bit of chile verde, which is a green chili, some salt, some pepper, and I would add onion, but I can't find my knife. So onion goes in as well. Spin it around, and voila, here's your basic pebre. That's what I just showed you. And you can enjoy your pebre with chips. Chaito, thank you so much for coming today. It's been wonderful. Thank you for sharing your time out of your busy schedules. You know, I encourage everyone to go to Chile and have a little bit of a wonderful, life-changing experience like I had. I know I'm going to go back. I'm hoping to go back very soon because I miss my grandmother so much and all my family and friends. And I wish the best for you. Thank you. Leave it as background sound.
Thank you for coming. Our next lecture is from Dr. Charlie Smith, Searching for Wallace in London. It's in about a month, and I'm going to have him draw for a couple of door prizes real quick, but please stay and try this, the